Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, October 20th, 2024. My name is Melanie C., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater, and I live in Canby, Oregon. The share ID numbers for Friday, October 18th, 2024 are the following. The 7 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study share ID number is 21842, 21,842. And for the 10 a.m. Big Book Study, our share ID number is 21843, 21,843. This morning, A Vision for You is happy to present, Am I Doing My Part? Today, we have the privilege of hearing from an inspiring speaker who will delve into a crucial aspect of our recovery journey, maintaining our fit spiritual condition. A personal reflection and action taken from the outline on page 85 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. As we know, the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book emphasizes the importance of this concept on page 85. It cautions us about how easy it is to let up on our commitment to spiritual wellness, putting anything and everything, even the littlest things, to the larger things in front of us aside and risking our spiritual recovery. This is reminding us that it is not merely a suggestion, but a serious imperative for our continued recovery. In our busy lives, it can be all too easy to overlook the daily practices that nurture our spiritual health. The Big Book outlines the essential steps that we must take to stay recovered, encouraging us to prioritize our spiritual fitness just as we would our physical health. It's a reminder that staying connected to our higher power and engaging in self-reflection, prayer, and service are vital for maintaining balance and strength in our lives. Our guest speaker today has a wealth of experience and insights to share, drawn from her own recovery journey. She will address the challenges we face in keeping our spiritual condition a priority and offer her practical strategies to overcome these obstacles. Her discovery of her recovery emphasizes that spiritual health is not just a one-time effort, but an ongoing commitment that requires diligence and intention. We are excited to hear her story and the wisdom she has gained along the way. Her insights will remind us that recovery is not just about abstaining from substances, but about cultivating a life filled with purpose, connection, and inner peace. So without further ado, please join me in welcoming our guest speaker, will share her journey and the vital lessons she has learned about staying in fit spiritual condition. Our speaker hails all the way from Vancouver, British Columbia. Good morning to you, Yvonne A., and welcome, welcome.
Oh, good morning, Melanie. Thank you so much. Wow, that's quite the introduction to live up to. I hope I'm able to do that this morning. It really is a privilege to be here. In the doctor's opinion, Dr. Silkworth talks about how Bill requested the privilege of being able to tell his story. And that's exactly how I feel each and every time I get the opportunity to talk about the journey and the miracle of this program in my life, because it shows up every day, sometimes in the most unexpected ways. So I'm just going to start out with a little bit of a qualification. I'm 62 years old. I came into the rooms in February of 2022. So I'm a relative toddler in this program. I'm still learning how to live this way of life, how to make, I guess, the most of my recovery and to make sure that I am staying in fit spiritual condition. I arrived at OA from a relapse in another non-12-step food addiction program. I had been struggling, you know, for decades with my weight. I am an overeater. I'm 5'2". My top weight was 265 pounds. I struggled with bulimia when I was probably in my mid to late 20s. It was significant, but it didn't last too long. I was able to get some therapy that helped me to set that part of my disease aside for the most part. Now, the side effect of doing that was that my weight skyrocketed. I had been, you know, always overweight, but never morbidly obese. And that's what happened when I stopped practicing bulimia. My disease showed up at a very early age. As a young child, I can remember my parents talking to me about shoplifting, how I got that candy bar, and the fact that I was going to have to take it back to the store and tell them that I stole it. I stole money from my dad every night. He would empty his pockets of his change onto his dresser. And he had this change collection of old coins and stuff. And I would take from that in small amounts to so that I could go to the candy store. And this was all before I was 10 years old. I wasn't a huge binger. I was a continuous eater. I was filling a hole, and if I felt like there was any room in there, I was putting more food in. Never a good dieter. My story does not have many successful weight loss attempts. I was just gaining. I had one period in my life when I had a little bit of weight loss. And so that's kind of, you know, my background of how I started out my career as an overeater. We're all in this room, so I call myself a garden variety. It's nothing special about me. I have pretty typical symptoms. I've done crazy things with food. I've tried, you know, almost every non-medical thing I could think of to arrest this disease, but nothing worked. But somehow, some way, well, we know that way. I know that now is higher power got me to the door of Overeaters Anonymous. And I actually came in. I didn't sit down. I kind of hung out around the back wall for the first couple of months trying to figure out how I could do this myself. I would literally ask at the end of meetings, okay, where can I find a step guide that I can just do myself? Like with everything, I never wanted to ask for help. I never thought I needed a lot of help. And that if I just had a tool, I could figure everything out. It took a bit of time, but finally I was convinced that that actually wasn't going to be able to work. And I committed to taking on a temporary sponsor. And, you know, it wasn't anything, there was no big book work at that point. It was just looking at myself as an overeater. And then I went to a conference out of Florida, and I was blessed there to hear some very good speakers. And it was one of those people who I spoke up and asked a question, and she said, why don't you call me later? And we can talk about that more. And so I did call, and I was blessed. I had no idea what a vision for you was. I didn't know anything about the 12 steps, really. I didn't know a lot about the big book even, and how I was supposed to work these steps. But I was blessed to, you know, God basically hand-delivered a vision sponsor to me. And she told me, you know, what her expectations of me were. And I wasn't over the moon about them, but I knew I had to do something different, and I'd been on the line long enough to hear multiple times by that point, get a sponsor, do what they say, and, you know, set aside what you know. So that's what I did. I got entirely abstinent, and we started to work the steps. And right up front in the foreword, you know, the big book tells us that we can recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And I had no idea really what that meant. I had no idea of what that was going to be like in my life when it showed up, but it provided me with hope that something was going to be different. And so here I am, 2.5 years later, and I have been blessed with the miracle of recovery and the ability to live in that recovery every single day, provided I take the necessary steps to keep myself in fit spiritual condition. And so what does recovery look like for me? Well, I have food neutrality. I did not know that was a thing. Any diet I had tried in 50 years, sure, once in a while I could lose a little bit of weight, but the food obsession never subsided at all. Today, I have peace in my head. That is just something that it's still miraculous when I talk about it. I cannot believe that it's just gone. I don't practice my old compulsive behaviors. My goodness, I'd have days when I would step on the scale more than half a dozen times. I don't even have a scale in my house anymore. So my alcoholic foods are out, and I practice entire abstinence. And of course, I'm having a spiritual awakening achieved through a deep and meaningful personal connection with my higher power. That was another thing that was really a surprise to me when I arrived in OA. I thought I had actually quite a personal relationship with a higher power, but it had been a long time since I talked to God. And when I arrived at the door, I couldn't believe how uncomfortable I was with everybody talking about God. And I actually had to start a list of terms that I could use, divine, spirit, until I could get used to. And now, I use God so easily. But that wasn't the case on day one. It was uncomfortable. And I say I'm having a spiritual awakening because on page 60, it tells us that, you know, we claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. And to me, that means this is a lifetime journey, a lifetime of practicing how to be the person that God intended me to be. And so here I am at meetings. I'm actually at an OA conference this weekend. So my whole weekend has just been full of the spirit of OA. And the fact that we have to keep working at this is further confirmed and into action, right? And Melanie mentioned this at the beginning. This is how we react so long as we stay in or keep in fit spiritual condition. And I was inspired recently when I heard a fellow say, you know, God does for me what I cannot do for myself, but God does not do for me what I can do for myself. And it just really brought that into focus. And I mean, we hear that. It really, you know, it really resonated for me to say, am I doing my part? And the fact that we have to do our part in this is further cemented in other comments I hear, right? There's someone on the line regularly that I hear this is a program. It's not for people who want it or people who need it. It's a program for people who do it. So it's that action of doing this. And another thing that I'd heard was it's done for us, to us, but not without us. So I cannot do this on my own. Oh my goodness. I look back and I laugh at myself now, thinking that, yeah, somehow if I could have just got a study guide, I could have sat in some, you know, corner in my house and figured out how to do this. And luckily for me, one of the things that the temporary sponsor did impart to me was that figuring it out was not one of the 12 steps. I didn't need to worry about that. And so, you know, I hear we strive for spiritual progress, not perfection. And I have a kind of brain that loves to grab hold of things like that and go, oh, well, hey, there's an out, right? I'm not trying to be perfect here. I just have to have progress. So, yeah, if I act crappy from time to time, big deal, right? No, I can't do that. I have to keep striving all the time to be living to the ideals that I've set for myself, for relationships in my life, and to live by the principles that are set out in this program so beautifully for us. You know, that those principles, you probably all know them, but I'm going to say them. Honesty, hope, faith, courage, integrity, willingness, humility, love, discipline, perseverance, spiritual awareness, and service. And all of those things are so so important to me, but it is critical. There are some there that are critical for me. Honesty being one of them. I would have told you before I started this program that I was so honest. But it is not the case. When I did my 4-step, that became quite obvious. And so that's something I have to keep at the forefront of my mind. Courage. Before I came in the door here, I would wake up in the morning and I would just be filled with this dread, the fear and the anxiety of what the day was going to bring, of how I wasn't going to be able to manage, of how somebody wasn't going to think I was good enough. We're filling my body before my feet were even on the floor in the morning. And so I need to ask God every day to give me the courage that I need to make it through that day, no matter what shows up. Willingness. I need to have the willingness to move forward, to take a small step, even when it seems like it's so hard to do that. And humility. Humility is, it's so funny because I bounce back and forth between, you know, not feeling like I'm ever good enough, that I don't live up to anything, to thinking that, you know, I should be, you know, the next year's keynote speaker at this OA convention because, oh my gosh, who could be better than me? It's so hilarious. I find that absolutely fascinating. And so I have to find that humility, and I'm going to talk more a little bit about all of those things, but those are some of the four. Those are the four that really stand out for me. And so the first thing that I do every day when I wake up is I thank God for the day that I've been given. I know now that every single day is a blessing I'm given from God. It's not a right. It's a privilege to be given another day. And it's up to me to make the most of that day. I say the first 3 steps every morning before I even put my feet on the floor. So now instead of having that fear and anxiety, I'm reminding myself that I don't have the power, but God does have the power. And I've made a commitment to tap into that power with God to live my life according to God's will. And God's will for me every single day has me maintaining my entire abstinence. That's my ticket in the door. Ground zero. And without that, I don't have anything. And so I know there's this argument about, you know, what's the most important thing in your life? Is it abstinence or is it God? Those two things go hand in hand for me. I can't be abstinent without God. And I can't have God without abstinence. I've seen what my life looks like when I am not abstinent. There is no God. I push God way to the back, way into the farthest seat in the room. And food becomes my God. Other people become my gods. My own will becomes my God. I listen to 100 things before I ask God when I'm in the food. So maintaining entire abstinence is absolutely key for me. I take my 3rd step commitment really seriously. And when I was working the steps, things were going fine. We were moving quickly. We spent a lot of time, of course, on the first 3 steps because it sets that foundation for us. And when we got to the 3rd step and we were coming to the end of that, my sponsor said to me, next week we're going to get on our knees together and we're going to say the 3rd step prayer together. And I was like, stunned. It's like, what? I said, oh, no, I can't get on my knees. I that's not going to happen. And she said, well, just think of, you know, like God is your father and we'll get on our knees. We'll say the prayer. It'll be fine. I said, no, I'm not doing it. She said, well, you are, and we'll see when. So Of course, the next week came, and of course I got on my knees because I remembered I'd said I would do whatever I was told to do. And it was actually a life-changing moment for me. I still can feel that feeling of turning my will and my life over to the care of God. And like I said, I took that as seriously as I take any other vow that I have made in my life. And I do not do it perfectly, but boy, I remember and I feel what happens when I don't live up to that and when I have to go make amends and all of that kind of stuff. I heard something recently, because it is so easy for me to still hop back in the driver's seat. And I heard a lady on the vision line actually sharing that, you know, the way she thinks of it is that, you know, she lets God set the GPS and then she just follows the GPS instructions. And I just thought, oh my gosh, that is the perfect description. Yes, I'm doing my part. I am driving the car, but I'm following God's instructions. I'm following the GPS. I'm taking the next right step, the next right action. And step four really opened my eyes, you know, to some of the truths about myself. That was pretty surprising for me, some of these things. I thought I was a pretty good person. I thought all my motives were good. I was trying to do things for people, be of service to people. And I found out that actually there was a lot going on in behind the scenes that I didn't know about. And some of, you know, for me, some of the things I was completely ensconced and still have to really, really be careful today not to let pride or false ego, I call it image management. I think that's a term that what my sponsor introduced me to. I want you to think I'm fabulous. I want you to think that, you know, I can do anything and everything. And that's just simply not the truth, right? That's that mask that I slip on so easily. And what happens when I slip on that mask is that all of a sudden I know everything and I am judging you. I have all kinds of negative thinking. I become completely dishonest. I'm not honest about who I am. I'm not honest about who I feel. I don't see myself honestly after long enough. So I have to really make sure that that mask does not slip back on. And, you know, I had a pretty typical, I think, list of character defects. And some of those, like I say, I still really have to work on every single day. I have to be aware of them. Others have been, you know, I've seen huge progress. God has blessed me by removing some of them out of my life. Self-pity and blaming others is one of those things. In my impatience, my negative thinking, those things are getting much, much better. Fear, you know, I still struggle with it, but not nearly to the extent that I used to. Anxiety, when I have anxiety now, that's a sign for me. That's a sign that something is not right. I'm not listening. I need to stop. I need to pause. I need to be asking God for direction because I am probably trying to figure it out on my own if I'm having anxiety about it. I mentioned honesty because that is such a tricky one. You know, I heard this weekend at the conference here that nothing can be changed unless it's faced. And that just kind of hit home for me that, you know, I am who I am, whether I admit to it or not, whether I can even see it or not, whether I have the awareness of it or not, I am who I am. And nothing changes about that until I can face that, till I can know that, till I can be open to the idea that maybe there's something about myself that I don't already know. There's been so much. If you had told me that before I came in the program, I would say, oh, no, I know everything about myself. Oh, my goodness gracious. It's amazing to me how little I actually knew about myself. And so I have to stay open to that. I have to stay open to the fact that there are probably still dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds, I don't know, of things that I don't know about myself. And when I get awareness of those, for me, that means that God is ready for me to start doing some work
on that character defect or that behavior, whatever it is, when it comes into my awareness, I now have a responsibility to start working on it. And sometimes I don't know what that means. Sometimes I'm not sure. And that's okay. It's okay. You know, I am human. I am going to make mistakes. Sometimes I'll listen. Sometimes I'll think that I'm doing God's will. But it's not always the case. Sometimes I'll get started down that path and I'll feel that anxiety and go, oh, I must have misunderstood. And that's okay because I'm just practicing. I'm practicing. I practice taking the action that I thought was needed. It didn't work out. That's okay. I can go back and I can take another action. And maybe that one will be the right one. But I get those actions. I get to the solutions. I get those things removed by practicing doing what I think is the next right thing. I'd love it if God left me a little list. If I could wake up every morning and have a little God, here's, dear Yvonne, here's your list of things to do today. But that doesn't happen to me. And sometimes my intuition is great, and sometimes I really struggle to tune into my intuition. When that happens, I try to get quiet. I try to just set it aside and let my brain focus on somebody else or something else for a time until I maybe get some direction. But I know that ultimately, no matter what, I am going to hit on eventually what God wants me to do, and that I'm going to see progress, and I'm going to know that God is working with me and that now I am on the right, that my right path, because I can never do it alone. If I'm struggling, if I'm having to work at it so hard, then it's not God's will for me. It's my will. And so, you know, I talked a bit about having to be open to, you know, the fact that I don't know everything about myself. Yeah, I also have to be open to new beliefs, new ways of behaving, the fact that I don't know everything, new about anything, never mind about me, new experiences. And that means that I have to stay teachable. If I am, if, you know, my husband will say something to me from time to time, and I really appreciate now that he says, do you realize you're being defensive? Because sometimes I don't. I'm trying to justify. I'm trying to defend my position. And I don't have to do that. I can stay in that moment quiet, listen to what he has to say. And when I've done that, again, these are the surprising ways I find out things. You know, I go, you know what, when I've had time to sit on it, when I've had time to let go of the emotion around it, I've been able to say, you know what, he is right. Maybe he didn't say it exactly the way I would have wanted him to say it. Maybe there's, you know, things that I don't agree with in there, but the underlying message is the truth. And if I can be open to that truth, if I can be teachable, if I can be willing to set aside what I thought was the truth for a new idea, then I'm making progress. I'm keeping my fit spiritual condition. It's when I'm hanging on to old stories. My sponsor once said to me, and I had this, you know, a huge, which I'll touch on maybe a bit if I have time, had a huge upheaval in my life while I was working the steps. In fact, while I was on step four away with my family. And my brain just filled with fear, with terror. It was one of the hardest things that I've been through for me in my lifetime. And the old stories that came up, I would talk to her about it, and she would say to me, do you know that that is going to happen? Well, no, I don't know it, but I'm pretty sure. And I was not pretty sure. It was just, you know, I'd taken down that well-worn tape, plugged it into the VCR, and pushed play. And I was making it up. That was not, and I can tell you now, I absolutely was making it up. I have this beautiful, amazing relationship with my sister. Not that it's it still has challenges today, but it's so much different. And I know it's going to continue to get even better as I continue to work on that. But, you know, I have small examples of changes that have happened to me in my life. And one of them happened just, was it yesterday? Yesterday? No, it was Friday night at the conference. And I walked into this room and this woman said, "Yvonne, it's so good to see you." And I thought, oh my gosh, I don't know this woman. I'm so embarrassed. I've forgotten who she is. So I didn't ask her what her name was. I mean, she had a name tag on that I eventually have diverted my eyes to. But this was me slipping that mask back on, right? It's like I have to pretend I know who you are because I'm going to offend you and make myself look like I'm not good enough if I don't remember who you are. And I just thought about it for so much time. And there were still a few minutes before the opening session was starting. And I thought, Yvonne, just go and ask her, tell her you're sorry you don't remember who she is. And so I went over and I said to her, "I'm sorry, can you remind me where I know you from?" And she said, "Actually, you don't. I thought you were someone else." And so that was just so funny to me and such a small way in which this program allows me to let the miracle of God into my life. I listened to God. I went over and asked her and we shared this moment. Probably she knew exactly why I was asking. She probably thought, oh gosh, she has no idea and she's so embarrassed. It was just such a small thing. And yet so indicative of the miracles and how I get to participate in life today in a way that I never would have been able to before. And, you know, in huge ways, this one is, so I have a real issue with codependence. You know, and I'm trying to do some work on that now in small ways, even though this is such a very big problem for me and a big part of, you know, how my sister and my husband and I have this kind of, I don't want to get into too much detail because it would take far, far too much time. But it's been a huge thing in my life. My sister and my husband really struggle with each other and they're both so important to me. And I've felt like I've been in the middle of that, being, you know, pulled, almost ripping in half because I want so badly to be able to make both of them happy. And that is codependence. And so here I am now at this point in my recovery, 2.5 years in, standing on the edge of what I visualize as this minefield. And I've got to make my way over to the other side. And I can see, I know God is on the other side of that. And I know God wants me to cross the minefield. There is no doubt in my mind. And yet I still have fear about what's going to happen when I make that step out onto that field. Is something going to happen? Is a limb going to blow off? Am I going to survive? You know, bad things happen to us. Bad things happen in life. I'm living this amazing life of recovery, but lots of things go wrong. You know, I lost my brother-in-law. My sister's husband died this year. That was really, really hard for our family. And yet I was able to show up for my family in ways that I never would have been able to if I wasn't in this program. And so I take those baby steps out onto that minefield, and I am doing that. I am nowhere close to across that minefield, but I am dedicated. I am dedicated to working those, I don't know even what to call them. I'm taking those steps. They're not the 12 steps, but that's kind of my next set of steps I have to take is across that minefield. I have to put all of my trust and faith into my higher power. My higher power would not be asking me to do that if it wasn't exactly the right thing. And so I am developing this new relationship with both of them, with both my sister and with my husband. And it is amazing the peace that I am finding. That is a miracle in this. Not the fact that most of the time now they get together, which is a miracle, but not the main miracle in this, which that's crazy for me to even say. The main miracle in it is that it's not tearing me in half, that God is giving me that needle and thread, telling me it's okay. It's okay. I don't have to fix this. God has that too. It's not up to me to be fixing their issues. And so I accept what God's plan for me is, even when it feels impossible. I know that I don't have to do it all in one step. I know I don't have to do it all in one day. I just have to do it one day at a time. Another thing I heard is, it's funny, that I'm at this conference and things kept popping up. But yesterday I heard multiple times, and when I hear something multiple times, it's like, I think this is something I need to pay attention to. I heard multiple people say, you know, I needed to grow up. The keynote speaker said, I may not have had the best childhood, but I had the longest. And of course, that got a good chuckle out of the crowd. But it is true. Like, I spent a lifetime not taking responsibility for myself, for my actions, for my behaviors. And that's what this program and my higher power are teaching me to do. And that includes my thoughts. Like, I can't just be able to put on, you know, an act all the time. Sometimes I have to just practice and still have the thoughts in the background, because that's the best I can do. But I have to be willing to let go of the thoughts as well. And a big part of being able to do that, funny enough for me, has turned out to be being able to forgive myself. I've never really had that much of a problem forgiving other people for their shortcomings. I get resentful, but I tend not to hold on to things for really long amounts of time, except for myself. It was like, no, you know better. I remember when I was in therapy, she said, boy, you've got what seems to be a book of rules. And I realized, as I've, you know, worked through therapy and worked through program now, how big that book is, and how I'm judging myself constantly, thinking no matter what it is, it's never good enough. And that's simply not the truth either, right? I have to be honest in my self-appraisal as well. And when I am not living up, so it's easier for me to see when I'm not living up. But I also have to be honest about when there is change. And I have to be honest that I am, you know, like I do everything that I can. Okay, maybe not everything. That's a big word. I do a lot in my spiritual life, in my relationships, in my service to community, to try to live up to what I think God would want me to do. And so when I fall short of that, I can't spend a lot of time in morbid reflection, beating myself up, telling myself I should have done better. It's wasted time. Yes, I know I should have done better. The best thing, the way I honor God in that, is to get back up on my feet, to brush myself off, and to try again. And it just brought to mind the fact that when I was about 16 months into this program, I eat to a weighed and measured food plan. And it was August, and there were fresh fruit is a big thing where I live. And I had a few extra blueberries with my breakfast. And that night, as I did my nightly review, and it said, you know, my question, was I abstinent today? I answered yes. And then the question, am I keeping anything to myself that I should have told somebody else? I said no. And I knew those were lies. I knew that was dishonest. And the next morning when I got up, I thought, yeah, I can't. I've got to make sure I don't take those blueberries today. And I took those blueberries plus a few more. And I did that for about 4 days. And I would find myself in the shower in the morning saying, okay, God, today no extra blueberries. I know it's small, but I got to stop taking the blueberries, or else I'm going to have to eventually tell, and I don't want to tell. I don't want to tell somebody that I've broken my abstinence. I don't want to have to do that. And that would repeated for those 4 days. And then I just realized, Yvonne, you're back in that cycle of addiction, swearing off, swearing today's going to be the day that I'm not going to take those extra blueberries. And that was, gosh, I'm getting a little bit choked up just thinking about that. Was the hardest thing I had to do, was to tell first some fellows that I had broken my abstinence. I had to call my sponsor and tell her I had broken my abstinence. I had to call people in meetings that I did service on that had abstinence requirements and tell them that I had broken my abstinence. And as hard as that was, and of course there was shame because there's 5 decades of living there that came right back up to the surface. But through all of that, and even though it was so hard to have to do that, I caught peace. I didn't take the blueberries the next day. I didn't feel like I was lying when I filled out my nightly review. I didn't have to beg God in the shower the next day to relieve that need and that obsession. It just came when I took the next right step, when I invited God back in. And I am so grateful that I was able to pick right up and stand up, brush myself off, and carry on. Because that's what I have to do if I'm going to have this life that I just love so much. You know, I'm here this weekend with people, and some of them are loving life, and some of them aren't. There are people here that are really still suffering. And I just want for them so much to find the miracle that I have found in this program. You know, I love and accept all of my fellows here. I don't know half of them. I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't be friends with, you know, many of them, but I love them all. I accept them just as they are today. And they're here just like I am, because that's where they were meant to be this weekend, spending time with fellows, sharing experiences we've had in this program. And so I'm going to continue. I'm going to continue practicing my trust and reliance on God. That faith is something that I need to bring in every single day. I have to practice that courage. I have to have the courage to trust God. It seems so much easier sometimes to trust myself. Yes, this fabulous brain must know what to do, right? Oh my gosh, how many times has this brain got me into so much trouble? How many times has God got me into trouble? None? Zero? And yet I still have to remind myself that I need to put all of my trust and reliance in God and God alone. So that means I seek Him out on all kinds of things. And, you know, I do believe that God cares about my food, about my clothes, about my things that I have to do today. God cares about me, cares about my life. He cares about me being out there carrying His message to everybody that I'm interacting with. It means I have to trust the process. Things don't always go the way I want them to. You know, when I was still losing weight, I got to this plateau, and six months, I had to wait at that number. It didn't change. I only weigh myself once a month. That number did not go up or down one single time. But I had to trust in the process. I had to trust that continuing to work this program or practice this program was going to move me forward in God's time, not in my time. And, you know, hey, we live in this fast-paced world. I'm not always ready for God's time, but that's how things happen. So I think I'm getting close to what I wanted to say. Oh, I guess, you know, the other thing is I do try to find the positive in everything. That was one of the things with my husband that used to drive him crazy. He'd go, what do you think about, and before he could barely even get the idea out of his head, I'd be going, no. So everything was no in my life. Now I try to find ways to yes, even when I don't really want to try to find a way to yes, because I know that if it's the right thing, it's going to happen. And if it's the wrong thing, that's okay. We're going to get to the right thing eventually. So I do try to bring that positivity into my day. I do that in the morning too. When I say my, you know, the first three steps, and when I thank God for the day, I run through a gratitude list of all of those things that I have in my life today, which are many, which I never thought were possible, which I didn't even know existed. When they say a life beyond our wildest dreams, I really cannot say enough how very much that promise has come true for me. I had no idea that this is what life could look like. The steps, you know, have given me a design for living. The living is my part. Am I living my life based on God's will, based on the principles of this program, based on finding love, on positivity? I have two choices in my life. I can surrender to this disease, or I can volunteer to keep doing the work, keep doing the steps, keep practicing this way of life. And today, I choose God. I choose abstinence. I choose the steps. I choose recovery. And that's all I have. I pass.
Thank you very, very much, Yvonne. That was a wonderful presentation. You gave so much of yourself today. I appreciate that very much. And Yvonne will give her contact information at the conclusion of the meeting, which will be after the recording stops. So stay with us for that and listen up for it. But the share ID number for today for her Sunday special edition will be 21844-21844 if you want to go back and take a listen or share that around. So the lines are now open for questions. If you have a question for Yvonne, please unmute your phone by pressing *1 on the phone keypad. Offer your first name, the first letter of your last name, and then your state. And then immediately upon asking your question, please press *1 again to remute your line. Who would like to ask a question this morning?
Lisa N.
Mary Lee
in Oregon. Lisa N. and Mary Lee.
Marisa
G. Oregon.
Somebody G. Who was that?
Marisa, M-A-R-I-S-A.
M-A-R-I-S-A-G. Okay, gotcha.
Natalie S.
Natalie S.
Meg F.
Meg, is that what M-E-G?
N-I-C-K.
Nick, okay, gotcha, Nick.
Sarah G.
Anyone else? Sarah G.
Sarah G.
Gotcha, thank you. I think that's it. Good lineup. We have Lisa N., Mary Lee R., Marissa G., Natalie S., Nick F., and Sarah G. First up with the questions, Lisa N. from Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning, Mel. Thanks for your service today. And Yvonne, beautiful presentation. Thank you. Just had a question about your blueberry story. I'm sorry that happened, but I'm sure God used it in a powerful way, as he did this morning. Very powerful. Did you work the steps over after that incident? How did you handle that personally? And maybe I said it and I missed it. I'm sorry if I did.
No, I did not actually mention that. Thank you for the question, Lisa. Yes, of course. I had broken my abstinence, and so I had to go back and work the steps again. There was still work to do and things to uncover. So I absolutely did that, yes.
Thank you for your question.
I don't know.
Morning, Lisa.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm And next up for the question is Mary Lee R. from Oregon. Mary Lee, want to press
good
star
morning.
One real quick? There you go.
Good morning, everyone. This is Mary Lee R. in Eugene, Oregon. And do you have a quick prayer that you say sometimes for all is well and, you know, I am safe?
I mean, I have a few prayers that I use on a regular basis. My shortest, quickest prayer is bless them, change me when I am struggling with people. I use that one a lot. I love the set aside prayer. That is a prayer that was introduced to me by my sponsor right when I started working that prayer. I use it with my sponsees when I work with them, and that is a huge, that's probably one of the biggest things, is just let me be open to new ideas, a new experience, a new way of thinking about you, God, and be open to new answers. That is a huge prayer for me. But honestly, I have had times in the program when I have been so upset that all I've been able to do is literally, I was in the kitchen, I ran to my back, to the bedroom in the back of the house, got on my knees, and I just said, please help me, God. I cannot do this. And that my prayer can be that short and that desperate. And it's effective. Like that when I remember exactly how quickly peace filled my body. It was like a complete shift in seconds. So yeah, God help me. That is my quickest and most effective prayer when I'm really needing something.
Thank you very much for your question. Next up is Marissa G. Where are you calling from, Marissa?
Good morning, Mel, and thank you. My name is Marissa G, and I'm from upstate New York. Thank you so much, Yvonne. I am newly recovered, and my next step is sponsorship. Do you have any advice for new people that are going to be starting their first sponsorship? I know that right now I am in a lot of fear. And your advice of willing to let go of that thought and that fear, I would love you to expound upon that. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for that question, Marissa. You know, I think that all of us, I don't think there's anybody, you know, who comes into OA and goes through the steps who feels qualified to sponsor when they finish the steps, including me. I was full of fear also. But the thing that we have to remember is that all we ever have is our own experience, our own journey to share with another person. We don't get people recovered. We can't recover for people. We can't give people perfect instructions on how to recover. Recovery is different for every person. And so when you realize, you know, if you're able to set aside the fact that it's not your responsibility, you'll also hear that, you know, there are a lot of people that come in the doors of OA. There are a lot of people who try to work the steps who don't make it, or they do, but then they fall back off again. That happens for each of us as it's supposed to happen. And so I am 2.5 years in. I have been sponsoring since I was able to sponsor, except for when I had my relapse and was reworking the steps. And I have a sponsee right now who will be the first person that has finished the 12 steps. So I've started with many, finished with few, and that's a part of the journey too. And I think that each time we have a sponsee that doesn't make it this time, it's okay. It's not anything we did. We did our job. God's given us a role in that sponsorship. That's to plant a seed of some form or another. Maybe down the road you'll see how that seed comes to fruition, or maybe not. You know, I have another fellow that says people come into our lives for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And sometimes we get sponsees just for a reason. There's one thing they need to hear from us, but they're not ready, or we're not the person that they're going to work the steps with, and that's okay. So, you know, we just do the best we can with the experience that we have. You've worked the 12 steps. That's your experience. You're going to share that with the, you know, with your first sponsee, and you're going to share it with the second sponsee. So thanks for the question, Marissa. We step off into the journey of sponsoring.
Thank you, Marissa. Marissa G from New York. Natalie S, it's your turn with a question. Where are you calling from?
Thank you, and thank you, Yvonne. This is Natalie S, recovered in Indiana. And I really appreciated what I heard you say about relationships, particularly between your husband and your sister. And I wondered if you had any thoughts you gave yourself, or any just experience, strength, and hope around the in-between time. For me, what happens, I have 5 adult children, and 2 of them are still really hurt and resentful. Some of them, it comes up at times, but they're very vocal. They're in their 20s, and they're vocal around extended family. And I've made amends to them. I'm trying to live differently in recovery. And yet, when that comes up, I stand dumbfounded, and I'm happy to admit my faults, but, you know, I want to move forward, and sometimes they aren't ready, and I just wondered if you could speak on that, if you have any experience with that. So that's my question. Thank you.
Thanks for the question, Natalie. I don't know that I have a ton of experience exactly in that way. I have made amends with my husband, obviously, and certainly things come up. And I touched a little bit on that is, you know, when people are saying things to me that are not sitting well, I try really hard just to keep my reaction in check. And when I say in check, what I mean is I don't let my brain run off telling myself the old stories. And for me, that might look like, you know, oh my gosh, I can't do anything right. I can't say anything right. I've tried to say I'm sorry. I've tried to make amends. And this keeps coming up. I try not to let my brain go too far down that road. I try to have enough awareness that I am in my story as opposed to in this moment of reality. And then I just tuck it away for a little bit. And I go, when I'm quiet, when it's not in the situation, I look at what he said and try to unpack that and see if there's truths in there that are new to me. Or maybe there is, you know, maybe there is something more that I need to address with him. And other times it's just the ability to share my feelings honestly, you know, to take him... I'm going to imagine this because I'm not having a specific situation pop into my mind. But if he were to say something in front of other people, and I found that challenging, I might try to find a time with him on the side, on our own, where I just said, you know, I hear this coming up for you. It brings stuff up for me too. Do we need to talk about this more? Is there something more that we haven't worked through yet that needs to be addressed? But I still find fear in doing that too. Like it's not that that's easy for me yet. But I try to look for the next right action. And I'm sorry, that doesn't feel like a very complete answer. But it's the best I have for you, Natalie. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Natalie S., with your question today. And Nick F., you're next up. And where are you calling from, Nick? Nick, star one, please.
Good morning, family. Sorry about that. I'm Nick F. in Tennessee.
Okay.
Can I be heard?
Your question. You betcha. Your question, please.
Okay. Thank you both for your service this morning. I guess I got two questions. One question is, if that's okay, is what do you do with, like, do you ever have guilt, like, how much your life has changed coming in, like when I first got abstinent, and when I first got abstinent, I didn't actually have my children. So of course, I needed to get my kids back. And now having a new job, it's like some big changes that needed to happen not so much take me away, but changes this dynamic shift in how I have to do the things that got me here. So if it's not guilt, like, how do you handle those emotions of having to change some of those fundamental things that you did to get here? And then the other question is like you shared, thank you so much for sharing about, is it abstinence or is it God, or, you know, is it God, is it abstinence? And how do you get to that conclusion when, like, for me, it was a lot of people that got on the bus before me, but such a dynamic, I guess, exclamation of how we do things. Like, my shit has to be different from other people, and I have to accept what God is saying for me. So thank you for saying what you did about that, because I kind of been struggling with that. So thank you. If you could say anything to either of those things, or both, perhaps. I pass.
Okay. I think, Melanie, can you recap those two questions?
I don't think there was a question truly formulated. I was waiting to see. Monique, could you formulate those into very specific questions, please?
Okay. Has your life changed drastically since you got recovered, with more, not so much program, but doing life on life terms?
Okay.
And was there a
All
second
right,
question?
Ma'am?
No. Okay.
Okay. All right. Yes. Oh, my goodness. My life has, like I said, my life has changed in ways that I could have never imagined, because I didn't know this was possible. You know, yes, now it's so interesting, because I remember when I was working the steps. And I don't remember exactly how long, I think it took me about 3 months to get through the steps. And I worked the steps like my hair was on fire. So I went to, I am retired, so I don't have, you know, to fit a job in. I went to a minimum of 12 meetings a week. I had my homework from my sponsor. I was trying to, you know, read what I could get my hands on. I was talking to other fellows. And at the end of the day, it was like, oh my gosh, this is like more work than a job was. How am I going to be able to live the rest of my life like this? Well, the good news for me is now I'm through the steps. I don't go to as many meetings. I still do. I am a person who goes to a meeting every day. I don't have any days that I miss a meeting. I typically do my meetings in the morning. It just helps set me on this path every single day. But now I've got those steps ingrained in and chiseled into my brain. And so I don't have to spend quite so much time learning. Now my job is to spend more time doing. I have to live my life in a way that supports this program. And so, yes, there's been huge, huge changes. My life is way more manageable now than it has ever been. Not that there aren't times when I feel like I'm too busy or I don't want to do things that are on my plate that I have to do. But on the days that are hardest, because I'm more aware that it's going to be a hard day and I ask God into that day over and over and over again, they usually go just fine. I sail through them and I think, wow, what was I so worried about? That was a breeze. Yeah, it was a breeze because I invited God to hold my hand. So yes, life is very, very different. Life is not always, you know, rainbows and unicorns, as they say. There are hard days, but I have this program. I have my fellows. I have God, and they get me through, no matter how hard it is. Sometimes seemingly impossible things happen because I'm living this way of life.
Thank you, Nick, for your question this morning from Tennessee. Next up is Sarah G, and then we'll open up the lines again for more questions. Sarah, where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Sarah G. I'm calling from New Jersey, and I just want to thank everybody for their amazing questions and, of course, for that beautiful presentation that I really identified so much with. My question this morning is, you were talking about that minefield. Can you give me an example what it is to go across that minefield? Like, to you, what is a step going into that minefield?
Okay, thank you for the question, Sarah. That minefield for me looks like a whole bunch of different things. It looks like having to say no to somebody when I know they need my help, because I either don't have the ability or it's just not going to work out. Like that was one of the crazy things I did before I came into program, was just said yes to stuff that I had no business saying yes to. And yet it feels so very hard to say no. So saying no is one of those things. But I know for my own well-being, for my own recovery, that sometimes I am going to have to do that. It means not hiding who I am, speaking my truth, speaking up with my own voice, not just agreeing with somebody for the sake of agreeing because I don't want a conflict. It means bringing up a hard topic instead of sweeping it under the carpet. It means telling somebody the truth when it seems like that's going to be hard for them to hear. All of those things that I think are going to cause harm to somebody else are really, really hard for me. And when I say harm, I don't mean, like, I'm not going to be mean and horrible and nasty. But if there's something that needs to be said, I need to say it. I don't know how I got into that state of never thinking that you could tell anybody anything. But sometimes it is the most loving, kind, and caring thing you can do to say that hard thing. Because sometimes until we, you know, I said when I was speaking that unless we face something, nothing changes. And unless somebody says something to me, I may not even be aware And so I'm not facing it and nothing is changing. And I'm really grateful when I hear that and I see that and I can take an action and my life gets better. I have to be able to do that for somebody else too. I have to say that hard thing in the most loving and kind way that I can and be there to support the person afterwards. So that looks like something on the minefield. Allowing a fight to happen seems like stepping into the minefield. I want to run the other way. I am the fight or flight. I am the flight. I do not like to fight. I do not like conflict. I just want it to go away. So and I have a husband who doesn't love to fight, but he hates my running away. And so it's stepping onto that minefield to keep my feet physically planted where they are and stay in that moment with him, even when it's uncomfortable. That's walking out on that minefield. There are so many examples that I could give, but those are the ones that come off the top of my head. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Sarah G. from New Jersey, for your question this morning. There is time, if you're up to it, Yvonne, for more questions before our time runs out today. If you're up to it, let's see who might be interested in asking a question. If you're wanting to ask a question, press star 1 on your phone keypad. Give your name, initial of your last name, and your state, please.
Karen P.
Karen P. Where are you calling from, Karen?
Florida.
Florida. Okay, great. Anyone else? Star 1, please. Well, in the interest of time,
Melinda.
Chicken, let's have... Oh, there you are. Hi, Melinda. First initial of your last name?
H as in horse.
And your state, please?
Virginia.
Got it. Thanks, Melinda. Okay, first up with a question is Karen P. from Florida.
Hi, can you hear me?
Loud and clear. You just jump right in.
Okay. Thank you so much for your share. I really needed to hear everything that you said. Can you please... give me more examples of honesty, like how else, different other ways that you share it. I mean, that's I struggle with that. So I just wanted to hear if you have any other examples or what has helped you to work on that.
Thank you, Karen, for that question. Yeah, I mean, honesty is such a huge thing with me. I can have a lie out of my mouth before I even really consciously know that I am going to lie. It happens in small ways, mostly now, but it wasn't that long ago that, my sister, so this is a kind of an example of just what I can be like and maybe how it explains how things are mine for me as well. My sister was staying with me for the weekend and she had bought some antiperspirant that she was allergic to. And so she asked me, or she had used one, so she said, maybe it can be of use to you. And she gave it to me, and she said, I have a second one here. Would you like that? Or, if you don't want it, I can just return it. What came out of my mouth was, oh, no, I'm fine. I've got, a few deodorants already in the bathroom cupboard. I don't need any more. That was a lie. I did not have a stock of deodorant in my bathroom cupboard. And I realized as soon as I had said it that I had lied about it. And this is one of the things that I didn't say to her at the time, oh, geez, that was a lie. I had to go and write on it. And I actually don't think I did tell her in the end. It wasn't that I had harmed her. And so I thought, why did I do that? Like, why did I feel the need to tell that lie as opposed to just saying, oh, no, thank you, I'm good. Or, there was just no reason for having to do that. And so lies show up in the small and very small ways for me like that. And I try to stop. I try to see why I did that. Try to recognize and just be aware. And I know that if I keep working on that, that will improve too. But dishonesty shows up in some big ways in my life too. Certainly the biggest dishonesty since I've been in program was the days of lying about, you know, having the extra blueberries. That it doesn't, you know, if I tell that story to other people who aren't in program, they kind of look at me weird, like, what are you talking about? Like, that is just so nothing. And it was so huge for me. And it kind of shook me to my core when that happened. And that kind of stuff, luckily, doesn't come up for me all of the time. But it's a really good reminder to me of what happens when I do have dishonesty. I lie a lot about how I feel through omission. I just don't speak up. I let people think things rather than going, actually, I'm not so keen to do that, or I'd rather we didn't. I am dishonest, you know, with my husband often. If I think that it's easier to smooth over something by telling a little lie or whatever, usually I have to fess up what it was and say, yeah, that wasn't true, I didn't do that. But, you know, my flight instinct brings out a lot of that dishonesty. The other thing that does is my image management. So if the truth is going to be something that I perceive will make you think less of me, then there is a good chance I'm either not going to say it or that I'm going to say something that is not truthful. And those can be, you know, like I say, it's all, there's so much small stuff. When you're asking me about specific examples and I'm trying to think, it's like, oh gosh, it's just so small stuff. But somebody will say, oh, you know, don't you think that so-and-so is this great musician? And I'll go, oh yeah, they're really good. Maybe you never heard of them before. And yet it would be so easy to just say, oh, I don't know who they are. I don't know. I have a weird brain when it comes to honesty. I don't have huge dishonesties that I am aware of in my life at this point, but I have to still fight the fight to be honest and not come up with those little things all the time, especially around the image management stuff. Yeah, I still want everybody to think I can do it all. And so that I'm always on the watch for dishonesty in those ways.
That's all I have.
Thank you, Karen. Yep, Karen P. from Florida. Thank you so much. Next up is Melinda H. from Virginia. Your question, please.
Yes, thank you so much for your presentation. I am watching my adult son self-destruct with addiction and isolation. And I would be welcome to any input that you have. What do I need to be doing or not doing? Thank you.
My goodness. Oh, I'm going to tell you up front, I am absolutely unqualified to answer that question. A, I am not a parent. And B, I have, you know, absolutely zero knowledge. What I can tell you, just in, you know, the way of maybe comforting words, Melinda, is that, you know, I absolutely believe that God is with us every single moment of every single day and is going to give us the strength, the tools, the words, the willingness to do what it is we need to do. And sometimes as a parent, it is so hard to have to stand by. But as the parent of an adult, sometimes, you know, the child becomes the same as any other adult, where we can offer our love. We can let them know we are there. But we can't, you know, you can't fix him. any more than you can fix your neighbor or, you know, the person that you go to church with if you go there, or, you know, me. We just don't have that ability. And so for me, when I'm in that kind of tough situation, the only thing that I can think of recently that I've been through that was very challenging was the death of my brother-in-law. And I knew that there was absolutely nothing. Nothing was going to change that. That was going to be, you know, the road that our family was on. And I'm not in any way suggesting that that's what's happening with you. I'm just saying that that was a hard situation for me. And so my commitment was not to try to change anything, but to show up the best that I could in every day, just as a support that knew they were there. So, you know, I talked to my sister every day to tell her that I was there if she needed me. And sometimes she did, and sometimes she didn't. And I had to just accept what each day brought. So I wish I had some deep, insightful answer on that. I wish I had deep, insightful answers on all of these things. But, it, you know, you're on a journey. God's going to help you with that journey. Just keep seeking direction. And there are going to be days where you feel hopeless and helpless. That's part of life. That's part of life. I'm sorry, I can't be more helpful.
Thank you, Melinda H., for your question this morning. We do have time for one more. If someone has a burning desire, press star 1 on your phone keypad to ask a question of Yvonne.
Nancy C.
Hanayeta. Nancy C. Gotcha. Let's see if we can get both of those in. Nancy C. and then Hanayeta. Go ahead, Nancy.
Hey, good morning, Yvonne. Great presentation. Thank you so much. And Melanie, always thank you for your service. you mentioned something that really struck me today. You said that it was important to realize that it says having had a spiritual awakening, not have. When did you realize that it wasn't an arrival point and that it's a continually daily practice of staying in that spiritual condition? And thanks.
Oh, thank you, Nancy. Arriving in at a destination. I mean, we hear that early on in the program, right? But when did it really strike home for me? You know, every day. I think that just gets deeper and deeper. The way I understand that changes. So at the beginning of my program, you know, I understood that I was going to have to keep working these 12 steps. I was going to have to keep staying abstinent. You know, they say one day at a time, but we're not crazy. We know that it's one day at a time, day after day after day. Like we don't get to stop doing this for certain days. But as the spiritual crept into it more, and I reconnected with my higher power more, I understood that this is a journey that I'm meant to be on for a lifetime. And that if I let go of that hand again, I mean, I have free will. I could let go of it any time I want. But boy, life sucks when I do. And so it's just, it comes into focus every day a little bit clearer. And yesterday at the conference, it came into focus just a little bit clearer. And I prepared some notes for my talk today. It was like, yeah, that is a lifetime. This is my lifetime of work. And I say work, but it's not work. It's a pleasure. It's a joy. So, yeah, I keep focusing, and I expect that it's going to change many more times, the focus on that. But I'm loving it, and I love you. Thanks, Nancy.
Thank you very much, Nancy C., for your question this morning. And Hanayeta R., your question, and that will be the last question that we'll have for
thank
today.
You, thank
so you're
you.
On.
Wasn't going to ask a question today, but thank you for your service as always, Melanie. And Yvonne, thank you so much. I will probably ask this question, but still call you. My name is Hannah Yetta R. from Texas, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. I am in remission. My question is, I came from a family, well, a statement first. I am from a family of liars. If you could tell a whopper of a lie and get away with it, it's like a kudo. It's like a high five or a fist bump. They didn't do that, but it felt that way. So do you think giving up or trying to give up lying was the hardest thing you've had to try to do? I know there's lots of challenges in this program, but for me, that was probably one of the most difficult things I had to do. So I was wondering if you had that same experience or not.
Well, thanks for your question. For me, I didn't even realize how dishonest I was. And so it wasn't that I was running around telling, you know, big, humongous lies. That wasn't really a part of my experience. It was as much lying to myself about what was reality. One of the big lies that I told myself when I was not in recovery before this program was that my disease wasn't hurting anybody else, that this was, you know, yes, I was inflicting pain on myself, but I wasn't hurting anybody else. And I realized, of course, as I did my four step and worked through the rest of the steps, that was absolutely a lie. So my lies have been that way. And then, like I mentioned before, the running away from things. If a lie allows me to run away from something, or if it allows me to seem, you know, somehow to be better than what I am, then I might tell them. So it's hard, you know. The dishonesty for me just kind of pops up automatically. Like I don't even realize that I'm going to tell a lie. So I think our experiences may be a little bit different, but it certainly is a hard one. It is a hard one. It keeps popping up. It's not like I'm in 2.5 years and can tell you that I never tell a lie anymore. That's not true. It happens, and I have to be on the lookout for it. Regularly, in all kinds of small ways, and like I say, including lying to myself about both, and both to the positive and the negative. So I am just as happy to, you know, let myself off the hook with a lie as I am to beat myself to a pulp with a lie. So I have to keep just coming back to the reality of the situation rather than living in those dishonest edges. And so sometimes maybe those aren't even really lies. They're dishonest perceptions of reality for me. And I'm going to pass with that.
Thank you very much. And that is our last question today. Again, Yvonne, you gave so much of yourself this morning. It was a wonderful presentation. I'll be so grateful to have it amongst all of our archive sessions that we've had today. And it is time to close. And we will now close within our usual fashion by reading from page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as we trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.